So lately I've received a few messages from listeners asking more about my background, and even though I'm not really a big fan about talking about myself, I figured I'd give you a little peek behind the curtains about how I arrived here. And also I'm going to introduce two new residential projects that we can follow along the journey from start to finish, and you can learn more about the process and the time frame and what goes into creating a residential project. And also, maybe some of the roadblocks are encountered along the way. My name is Chris Novelli, and I am the principal owner of N3 Architecture based out of Hopedale, Massachusetts, and welcome to the Home Design Academy podcast, where I help people understand design and construction so that they can make better decisions on their projects and communicate more effectively with their architects and contractors. Okay, so we are on episode 31 of the Home Design Academy podcast, and as I mentioned in the intro, today we're going to be talking a little bit more about my background. And then we will also be starting to follow two new projects that I've got going on. But before we get started, I want you to visit n3architecture.com for more details, and please email any questions you have to chris@n3architecture.com. I would love to help you out with any of the problems that you're having regarding your project or questions that you may have as related to architecture and construction. Some other news, I am currently in the process of writing an ebook, which is going to be directed towards homeowners on what to expect during your home construction project. And that's currently being written, and stay tuned to n3architecture.com. In this podcast, the expected release date and launch date of this ebook is fall 2021, but I'm going to be having some more announcements and more updates as we get closer to that date. So now a little bit about my origins and how I got started in architecture. So I grew up in a Massachusetts suburb, and I had no clue what an architect was. And when I was young, though, I had a large room. And in this room, I would rearrange the furniture often, sometimes monthly. And every time I did so, I would actually draw a floor plan of that space. And I had no clue what an architect was. I had no clue what a floor plan was. But it just felt right to draw the room and the furniture in that room and try out different things. And I actually took my mom had this yardstick that folded up, right? And so I unfolded it, and I actually took some measurements of the room and some measurements of my bed and the chairs and this other various furniture pieces that I had in there. And, you know, every month I would draw up a little floor plan, and I would, you know, draw the furniture and cut them into different, cut them out, and I would slide them around the paper and try to figure out a new and different arrangement. And I did this so often, I think I tried just about every arrangement of furniture there was possible. Fast forward to the summer before my freshman year of high school, and me and my friends were riding our bikes around the neighborhood, just hanging out. And one of the older kids in the neighborhood came out and was talking to us a little bit. And he said to me and my friends, he's like, "You have to take the mechanical drafting class because it's taught by the woodshop teacher and he doesn't care about anything. And you just get to hang out and listen to the radio and draw some stuff. And it's an easy A, an easy grade." So me and my friends were like, "Cool, that sounds awesome." And so a couple of us actually signed up for it. You know, we went into this class thinking that it's just going to be a good time and an easy grade. But I found that I absolutely loved it. I loved drawing these pieces of these machines and mechanisms that all went together. And I really got into it. And so they only offered that mechanical drafting class just for 2 years. And after those 2 years, I had to switch to the architectural drafting class. And it was the same class taught by the same woodshop teacher. And this woodshop teacher didn't teach us anything. He just kind of put his feet up on the table and pointed at the books on the bookcase and said, "Draw me something." And so I had to pretty much teach myself how to draw, teach myself about line weights and all the different symbols and representation methods. And I really got into it. I found myself thinking about my designs, my architectural designs, you know, when I wasn't in school, and I would carry around a little sketchbook, and I would sketch up some things, and then I would go into the drafting class at school and I would try them out. And I just got so infatuated with architectural design. So then it came time to start talking with the guidance counselor about college and plans for after high school. And my guidance counselor really, you know, she put me down. She thought that I wasn't going to, you know, amount to anything just because I had one semester or one, you know, year of high school where I didn't really get the best grades because I was more hanging out with my friends and doing teenager stuff. But she took that as a sign that I was not going to be good at going to college, and that when I told her that I wanted to be an architect, she, you know, pretty much laughed in my face. And so just the type of personality that I have, if you tell me that I'm not going to be good at something, I'm going to try so much harder. And I get fueled by that negativity towards me. So almost to prove her wrong, I said, you know what, I'm only going to apply to architecture schools. And even though she said, oh, you should apply to the community college just to have a safe backup, I was like, no, I'm not going to waste my time with something that I don't want to do. I knew I wanted to be an architect, and I knew that the path was to go to school for architecture. So I applied to Wentworth Institute of Technology in Boston on the recommendations from one of my good friends who said that that Wentworth had a great program. So I checked into it, and he was right, and I loved it. And so I applied to Wentworth, was accepted, and I went there and didn't look back. So I think, you know, every architecture student's first year is a little bit of a wake-up call, right? They may go into the program thinking one thing, but then it really is completely different. A lot more work than I think any high school student would expect or anticipate. And so, you know, I kind of struggled that first year, but I got through it. And then that first summer after my freshman year of college, I went back to my hometown to, you know, live with my parents through the summer. And I got a job as a summer intern in a local architecture firm. And wow, did I have such a great experience. This firm took me in, and they didn't just stick me in the corner in front of a computer and told me to draw bathroom details. No, they brought me out to the job site. They had me measuring historic buildings. They had me doing some design work. They had me. They took me along to some construction meetings with the contractors and the clients. And it was such an eye-opening, wonderful experience that I went back to, you know, when I went back into my sophomore year, it was just fuel for the fire. And I just took off from there. So I'm not exactly sure the way that Wentworth structures their architecture program now, but when I was there, all of the architecture students were in one big group for the first 2 years. And then after your first 2 years, you had to reapply to either the four-year Bachelor of Architectural Engineering program or the five-year Professional Bachelor of Architecture program. And a lot of people end up dropping out after the 2 years, and I think that after the 2 years, you do get an associate's degree, so they at least had that to fall back on. But when I was choosing between which program I wanted to, the four-year program, Architectural Engineering, felt like it suited my skill set more. I wanted to focus more on and learn more about the technical aspects of architecture, about construction methods, about building structure, and more than just design theory. And so, you know, if you ask 10 different architects this question, what should you be focusing on during your college years? Should you be focusing more on design and design theory or more technical stuff? You're going to get 10 different answers, right? So for me at the time, I really wanted to learn, and I was really more excited about the technical aspects of architecture. So I went into that four-year program, and there was design studios, so we still got the design portion, but we got all this technical information too. So throughout the rest of my time at Wentworth, I completed other internships. Some of them were during the summer semesters, and others were during spring and fall semesters, because at the time Wentworth had this mandatory co-op program where they mixed the semesters up, and sometimes you would be required to go and get a job in your field during the spring semester, but then take classes in the summer semester. So it was a little bit different, the way that they arranged their program at the time. So I worked for a couple different other firms while at Wentworth. One, I worked for a large development corporation that was focused on building and operating shopping centers throughout the country. And I spent most of my time at that place. I spent most of my time dealing with executives with slick-backed hair and fancy suits that just really treated the people under them like total crap. And it really turned me off to that whole retail executive type of world. And it reinforced that that's not the type of firm that I wanted to work for, the type of company that I wanted to work for. And then I also had a summer or a co-op semester at a larger architectural firm. And when I was there, I saw how some of the younger staff got stuck doing sort of the least important work, and I saw some of the egos that are present in the upper level project manager, project architect roles, and how they wanted to sort of protect their role in the company or protect their design, and the younger staff wasn't really given a lot of the opportunities that they would get if they went to a smaller firm. So I also found, you know, that was a good experience because I knew coming out of Wentworth when I was graduating, I knew that I wanted to work for a smaller firm because you got to do a lot more. You got to wear more of the hats. So when I graduated from Wentworth, I returned to that first firm that I interned at during my first summer internship. And so I returned there to work full time. And man, I was thrown into the fire immediately, running projects from start to end on day one. Not very many young professionals coming right out of college get that sort of experience and that sort of responsibility from day one. And so it was great. I was responsible for meeting with the clients. I was responsible for creating the designs, the construction drawings, the detailing, and the construction administration while the project was being built. And, you know, at first, of course, I was working under the direct supervision of the principal architect, and they would have my back and correct me if I was wrong, but they allowed me to make mistakes. They allowed me to figure out things on my own, and the way that they trained their young staff, it was great because it gave them so much empowerment and so much ability to take on these situations. And so I was always really grateful for the way that they handled their young staff. And then I started working on some new construction projects and some larger historical preservation work. And, you know, I helped out the other project managers on their projects, working on schools and fire stations and other large projects. And I ended up staying with that firm for 21 years. And it was, you know, at sometimes I look back and think, well, maybe I could have moved around the country and worked at different places or worked at different firms in the general area, or worked at, you know, maybe went back to Boston and worked at some of the firms in Boston and had a different career path. But I was always happy. They always paid me well, and I was doing good projects, and I had a lot of responsibility. So I stayed there for 21 years. And I would say, you know, maybe the last 5 to 7 years that I was there, they were grooming me to take over the firm when the current principal architect went into retirement. And I was never really sure that that is what I wanted. I mean, it was a family firm. It was a small firm. And even though they treated me like family, even though they kind of considered me family, I was never actually going to be family. It was never actually going to be my firm. And I could probably never run the firm the way that I wanted to. I would have to sort of step into the role that was already predefined and run things the way that they expected it to be run, even if the principal architect was retired. So I was always a little bit hesitant. And then, you know, after thinking about it, after discussing it with my wife and really, you know, over several years thinking about what I actually wanted to do, I really wanted to try going out on my own and launching a firm. So that's when I launched. I decided just to go for it, right? You can only live once, and I didn't want to have any regrets. And so I launched N3 Architecture, and it's been great. So I don't know what the future holds, and maybe 5 years, 10 years down the road, I'll try a different path. But for right now, I'm really happy that I took this adventure, and so I'm happy to see where it goes. Having said all that, this is a perfect opportunity to talk to you about Entre Architect. So are you an architect or an architecture student? If so, you need to know about Entre Architect. Entre Architect is many things. It's a blog, it's a podcast, it's a membership group, it's a private Facebook group. It's a place where small firm architects and large firm architects and architectural students can go for camaraderie, to ask questions, and to take advantages of the amazing resources that they have available. And some of these resources include downloadable documents that you can customize and start using in your firm today. Becoming a member of the Entre Architect Academy gives you access to the monthly expert training session, which include all the replays of the training sessions going back several years, I think to 2017 or 2015. But just think about that. Monthly training sessions with business experts, business leaders that you can learn from and take that information and use it in your firms. So there's also mastermind groups that you can join. I belong to two of the masterminds in Entre Architect, and the information that you can share and the bouncing ideas back and forth and the accountability that you have to improve your business, it's great. So, you know, I worked for that firm. I just said I worked for that firm for 21 years before I launched N3 Architecture. And had I joined the Entre Architect Academy earlier, had I taken advantage of everything that Entre Architect has to offer, I would have started my firm years earlier than I did. So if any of this is an interest to you, if you're the owner of a small firm, or if you're an employee of a firm who dreams of going out on your own one day, or even if you're a student who just wants to learn the business side of architecture that they don't teach you in school, go to n3architecture.com, go to the resources page. You'll see a link on that resources page for resources for architects. Click on that link. Click on the link to Entre Architect, and don't wait. Do it today. Okay, so for this next segment, I thought it would be fun to introduce two new projects that I've recently started, and we can follow them along from start to finish. And a lot of people don't understand the process of design and construction, and you know, maybe they understand the construction side of things, but they don't understand all the work and all the steps that you need to take from the time that you raise your hand and say, yes, I want to do a project, until you're moving into your new house or your renovated house. They don't understand everything that happens. So I'm going to use this opportunity to talk about two projects, and I can give updates on them on every episode. And so with that said, let's jump into the first project. I'm going to call this Project 47. So Project 47, the clients originally contacted me via email in early spring of 2021. I think April of 2021. Due to some conflicting schedules, we weren't able to actually meet in person until early June. And so we had this first meeting, and it was just to discuss the project goals. Now, this is a married couple who is nearing retirement, and they want to stay in their house. They don't want to sell their house and move to a different place. They like their house, they like their neighborhood, they like their location. They want to set up their house for aging in place. They're thinking about what's it going to be like to live here when we're 80 years old. And so they want to improve the use and the flow of the house and have it be better for entertainment, and then they want to have it for to be better for visiting family. They currently have 6 grandkids, and maybe they'll have more in the future, who knows. But they want to have the room for their grandkids and their extended family to come and stay with them over, well, let's say if it's over holidays or over summer break, they want the ability for these grandkids and the family to come and stay with them comfortably. So the other thing that's of concern is there's going to be zoning issues. It's an existing non-conforming lot, which does not comply with the required setbacks from the town's zoning ordinance. So we know going in that any addition that gets put on this property that expands the footprint is going to need, we're going to need to present to the Zoning Board of Appeals and hopefully get granted that variance so that this project can be built. And you know, there's also budgetary concerns, as there are with most projects. No one has an unlimited budget, right? So they're already thinking about, like, how can we separate this project into phases? Phase one might be one thing, phase two, the next step, phase three is sort of the final piece in the puzzle. So we have to come up with not only how are we going to get around with zoning, but how can we phase the project accordingly so that the pieces that are implemented make sense. And with all that said, there's going to be multiple options. Like, we're in this initial meeting and we are already talking about so many different ways that they can accomplish their goals. So when I encounter a client like this that has all these different things that they're thinking of, and I bring my knowledge and experience to the table, and I can see different ways that I would complete the goal, what I did is I gave them a proposal for architectural services that was for schematic design only. And the reason I did this is because it allows us to study the design options without investing a huge portion of money. And you know, the other thing that it does is I cannot give them a fee to complete the construction drawings for a project that I don't know what the final goal is, right? I don't know is it going to be a small addition or is it going to be a large addition? Is it going to be an addition off the side? Is it going to be an addition off the back? I can't really give them a fee for the construction drawings until I know what that is. So we decided to move forward with just a proposal for schematic design. And I think this is nice because it gives the owner some flexibility and it gives me some flexibility as well as to what I can design, and I'm not worried about spending too much time on the schematic design and not leaving enough sort of hours in the fee proposal to work on the construction drawings. So I would say a few weeks after I gave them that proposal, a few weeks after that initial meeting, they accepted the proposal. And then just due to schedule, a few weeks after that, I was able to get in and measure the house. So you can already see we're at least a month into after the initially contact, or not initially contacted me, we're at least a month into after we had that initial meeting, and I'm just getting to the point where I'm measuring and documenting the existing house. And so the way that I do things is I have to measure and document all spaces, 100% of the house, all floor levels, all rooms, basement, attic, everything. If there's a space that I can get into, I document it and I measure it. And the way that I do this is because the program that I use, which is a 3D modeling program, you kind of have to know everything. I can't just measure up the first floor or take some measurements in the living room and then just go from there. No, in order to complete the 3D modeling, you need measurements of the entire space. So from the time I measured, it took me maybe about a week or so just because of other commitments to draw the existing conditions, and then a few more weeks to come up with the design options. Now, for the design options on this program of this project, I chose to work with hand sketches. And so when you go into the computer too soon, you get too focused on the details instead of focusing on the big picture. So, you know, again, it depends on the type of project. Some projects only have really one solution, so you can jump right into the computer. Other people, other architects might like working in the computer from the start. But for me, whenever I'm working with a client who's not sure what they want, and when a client that has multiple design options, desired, it is so much easier and quicker and better to draw these by hand and to sketch these by hand. So it took some time for me to create these options, and then we found another time to meet to review. And so just to focus on the timeline, to this date, we are 4 months since the initial client contact, and at about 6 weeks after our first meeting is when I went to present the options to them. And so for this project, I actually ended up giving them 5 different options for the first floor layout, and I think 7 different options for the second floor layout, and then several different options for the exterior of the house. But the goal for these conceptual options is brainstorming, right? It's just to get all the ideas out on paper to see what works and what doesn't work. And some of the designs that they liked, some they didn't like. Some of the designs were completely unexpected and made them sit back and think differently. And so this is the point of the design process. The design and the drawings facilitate a conversation between the architect and the client. And I get to learn a lot more about the client than I did on that initial meeting and their original list of goals. So currently they're going to be taking some time to digest everything that we talked about and talk more amongst themselves and come to some sort of conclusion on which option or combination of option or option with modifications appeals to them most. And from there, what I'm going to do in the future is I'll take whatever preferred design option they like. I'll then take it into the computer, generate some hardline plans, elevations, and some exterior renderings. We'll meet again to discuss the updated design, make any other changes that they see necessary. And then after that, we're most likely going to sit down and have an informal conversation with the building inspector. So like I said, this project is most likely going to require a variance from the Zoning Board of Appeals. And I always think that it's best to hold these informal conversations with the building officials to get their take on what they think is possible and what they feel the ZBA will approve. Now, the building inspector, I know building inspectors are not going to say, yes, the ZBA will approve this, or no, they won't. They don't have the authority to do that, but they can certainly give their opinions and their recommendations. So following that meeting that we're going to set up with the building inspector, I'm going to make any other updates that we feel are beneficial to the project. And then we're going to have to end up submitting for a variance to the Zoning Board of Appeals. So we'll see where that goes. But one of the options I did present them with is an option that wouldn't require a variance. So if the ZBA says no, the addition's not allowed, then at least we have something else to fall back on. So that was Project 47, and I will continue to give updates along the way, and you can follow the story and follow the path on how we get from this early schematic design phase into approving the design and into the construction drawing. So stay tuned for more of that. But I also wanted to talk about a different project. We'll call this one Project 48, just for nice, easy reference. So the reason I also want to talk about Project 48 is it's a little bit different project. Project 47, we have a couple that's approaching retirement, and they want to set it up for aging in place. They want to set it up for grandkids, and they have zoning issues. Project 48 is a couple in their early 40s, and they have some young children, and it's a much smaller house, but it's in a town outside of a major city. And if you've ever been to any towns outside of major cities, you'll know that the lots are small and they're jammed in, and you don't really have a lot of room. So in this particular house, there's no way to expand the house in the side from the sides or from the back. There's just no room on the property, so the only way is to go up. So this project, Project 48, is going to be turning the existing attic into usable space, and we're going to be doing this by installing dormers or maybe even blowing the whole roof off and raising the entire roof. Who knows? We're still really early in the process, and we don't know what shape the project's going to take. But we do know that 3 bedrooms and a bathroom, or 3 bedrooms and maybe 2 bathrooms, are going to be added into this existing attic space, and that we're going to have to reorganize the flow of the first floor level just to accommodate the stairs and the access up to the attic. As far as architectural proposals for my work and for my fee, unlike Project 47, where we didn't know where the final design was going to end up and there's going to be multiple options explored, Project 48, there's really only one solution, that's to go up. So I'm able to give them a fee that will reflect not only schematic design, but construction drawings through to construction administration. But for this particular couple, I gave them a tiered proposal. So it has tiers, levels 1, 2, and 3 based upon the level of services. And so if you think tier 1 is just basic drawings, builder grade set with very little detail on it. Tier 3 might be the complete, we're going to pick out all the paint colors, we're going to pick out the tiles, we're going to pick out the door hinges and have all that information compiled on the drawings and specifications so that there's no decisions that need to be made while we're under construction. And then phase 2, the mid-level proposal, is somewhere in between where we're going to have materials noted and detailed, but we're not going to go full into making all of those actual material selections until the project's under construction. So in the end, they ended up choosing the tier level 1, which is the base level services. And that's fine. They can go and take these drawings and get contractor bids, and it gives them flexibility to change finishes and materials. But the base level of drawings will be there. And for me, the expectations are nice and clear. They know what they're going to get from me, and they have the ability to make these finished material decisions at a later date. So the timeline on Project 48, from the initial client contact to when they accepted the proposal, was probably about a month. And then from there, we scheduled time for me to come out and measure. And just like Project 47, I'm measuring the entire building, basement, first floor, attic level, all the doors, all the windows, all the walls. I'm measuring everything. Right. And then that's where we're at with the project. And from there, it should take me about 2 or 3 weeks based upon my current workload to not only draw and model these existing conditions, but to get them some design options. And like I said, there's really only one option, but for the layout, but maybe the options for this are how the exterior is treated. So follow along for more updates on Project 48. And Project 47. I think this will be an interesting experiment as I talk about what's going on these projects sort of start to finish, and you as the audience can follow along. So that wraps up another episode of the Home Design Academy podcast. I hope that you learned something and enjoyed yourself along the way. Make sure you subscribe and leave a review on your podcast player of choice. Visit n3architecture.com for more information. Email your questions to chris@n3architecture.com. And if you're an architect or an architecture student, consider becoming a member of the Entree Architect community. Go to n3architecture.com/resources, click on the resources for architects, and you can follow along and join the Entree Architect community. And lastly, if you've enjoyed this podcast episode or any of my episodes, please feel free to share it with a family or friend member. Thank you very much, and I will see you in the next episode.